Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning. As always, I'm showing you a few copies of our various publications that publisher Cheryl Smith produces. I think it's very good work, very informative for us. Let me just tell you what you're doing right now. Right now, you are tuned into I Was Just Thinking. I'm your host, Norma Adams Wade, and you are my co-host. And as I tell you, I blatantly stole that from Wendy Williams, and we continue to wish her well. Let me explain my mask. I am determined, as I tell you every week, to stick with the health protocol with the wish and hope and prayer that we will get back to a day when when we don't have to wear them because of a health condition. I am in a building with other people, but I'm in a room by myself. So because of that, I will remove my mask. And when I leave the building, I will return it. Today, we've got a very exciting show. But let me remind you, if at any point as we're interviewing our guests, if you would like to call in on the Blog Talk line, it is 646-200-0459. Again, 646-200-0459. If you would like to express an opinion or ask a question. So let me bring in our guest. And while you're looking at his handsome face, I will tell you a little bit about him, and then I will allow him to speak. Audience, you are about to hear from Rodney Brooks, and he is a veteran journalist and an expert in retirement financing. He has written, oh gosh, well over 30 or 40 years or so on the subject of wealth and health and how we are impacted by personal finances. He loves to inform us about retirement and how to get ready for retirement and getting our personal finances in order. Now, today, Rodney A. Brooks, veteran journalist and author, is going to tell us about his newest book. Now, he's written others. He's ghostwritten for other financial professionals. But his newest book is called Fixing the Racial Wealth Gap, Racism and Discrimination. So I'm looking forward to him telling us about that. Some of the publications that he has, he's written for various publications over his 30 or 40 years in the profession. Some include USA Today, The Washington Post, ESPN, The Undefeated, and National Geographic, just to name a few. Well, welcome, Rodney A. Brooks. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Good. Well, we are just going to jump right in there with both feet and talk about this latest book. And you can tell us some of your others on throughout our conversation. But this latest one, as I said, is Fixing the Racial Wealth Gap, Racism and Discrimination. So let's start with you telling us the key point that you wanted readers to glean from this book. What's the overriding point that you want readers to get out of this book?
Well, the big thing for me was, okay, the racial wealth gap is huge.
Uh-huh.
The average net wealth of a white family is $171,000. The average net wealth of a black family is $17,000.
Oh wow! So that is what you call a gap.
Right,
that's
right.
A gap.
So we have, you know, we have a much lower home ownership rate. Black Americans have a home ownership rate of about 43%.
Uh-huh.
And that compares to a white home ownership of 73%.
Wow.
So we could go on with the statistics, but so I needed to do a book that would help African Americans with their personal finances.
Uh-huh.
But to jump into it without talking about how we got here,
yeah,
would be kind of unfair. And we needed the history to say, you know, we have suffered racism and discrimination for 400 years.
Yeah,
And, you know, we could go back to last year. It was all about Tulsa, you know, and how black folks were stripped of their businesses and homes by angry white mobs who burned down the community.
Uh-huh.
But that happened in cities all over the country. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't dozens of, you know, it was Philadelphia, it was New York, it was, you know, in Alabama, it was everywhere.
Yes.
So we have instances like that where we gained wealth and we lost it, and it was taken. You know, we have instances where our land was just taken away and we were murdered. I mean. And, you know, then you could get onto the, you know, more specific things. You know, the farmers were basically, have been suing the USDA for years saying that they weren't getting the loans that they needed to survive.
Right.
And the black, number of black farmers has dwindled down to minuscule. And then you could look at things like when the black veterans were coming back from World War II.
Yeah.
So the Veterans Act, I mean, so the veterans benefits were not applied equally. I mean, basically, the government passed down administration of that law to these racist states.
Wow.
Who did everything they could to deny benefits to black veterans. So, you know, you could go on and on and on.
Right.
And listen, so that's why we are here. And then, so, you know, so the first thing I wanted to do was say, you know, This is how we got here.
Okay.
These are the numbers. And
let me jump in. Let me interrupt you right there. This is how we got here, I heard you say. Have you gotten any kind of negative reaction from potential readers saying, okay, there y'all go again, digging up that old stuff. That's bygone. We got to look forward. But I hear you saying you can't move forward unless you see how we got here. So have you gotten any people tell you need to move on, you need to move on? I don't want to hear that old stuff. You gotten anything like that?
Well, yeah. There are people who still say there is no racial wealth gap.
Oh, my God.
And all I say is look at the numbers. But, you know, and just sort of, we can't, it's not just the past. I mean, it's still going on. I mean, but, you know, if you look at some of the stories now about home appraisals, and you know, it's like happens repeatedly.
Uh-huh.
A black family has a home appraisal about to go on the market.
Yeah.
And it's undervalued by the appraiser. And they remove every evidence of being black and have a white family stand in for them, and the appraisal goes up by $100,000 or $200,000.
My gosh.
But it's not over. I mean, it's still happening.
That is so, well, it's really disheartening, but we all know that it is still happening. It is not over. But anyway, let me move on to this, what I wanted to know about this particular book. Now, you have written on your own about three other books, and you'll tell us. And then you've ghostwritten for other financial professionals about six books. So total, that's right at, you know, nine or so books. But why this particular topic at this particular time, where we go back and look at how we got here? The how part of it, is that something that has been just kind of egging you and you just hadn't had the time to deal with it? Why now?
The why now is because people have been telling me, okay, I have been writing about personal finance and for years, and people have been telling me that we need to do a personal finance book directly aimed at African Americans.
Okay.
So that's what this book is. And why now is because of all the discussions of the wealth gap. You know, the first couple of chapters basically look at the numbers and how we got here.
Okay.
But the rest of it focuses on things like increasing financial literacy, you know, the things that will be, you know, in why we don't invest in stocks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, saving for retirement. So basically the why now is because there is so much now written about the wealth gap. This is how these are some avenues that we can use to improve the wealth gap, or basically close the wealth. We're not going to close it, but now it's like narrow it down.
Okay, now let me ask you this. You write a lot about the period in our lives for retirement. Some of us have gotten there. Some are much younger people will eventually get there. People of our culture, African Americans, descendants of Africa, it seems that we do not do much to prepare for that. And retirement is an uncertain period. It seems that it is part of your goal to change that behavior of not preparing. Am I reading your motives correctly? That there is an attempt on your part, because we wake up one morning and we retired, and then we go, oh well, what do I do now? So.
Right. Yes, that's a big part of the motive for writing the book. A third of Black Americans who are have retired depend on Social Security for 90% of their income. Now, the average Social Security check is $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
So, and I've written before about how, you know, Black Americans also have all these health issues. So we basically have high incidence of health issues,
okay,
of heart disease, blood pressure, diabetes, many things at a rate higher than white Americans. So as we get older, we have these health issues. At the same time, we have these money issues.
Right.
So that's a big concern. So you know, I basically encourage people, you know, if you have a 401k on your job.
Okay.
Okay. You need to contribute, because we contribute to 401ks at a lower rate than white Americans.
Oh. You
contribute to retirement accounts. You know, we're past the days where these companies provide pensions. So all of the, you know, all of it all falls on us to be prepared for this work. And we're quitting work without any income. You know, and the other thing is what we're doing is we retire early. I mean, there are reasons for that, because we need the money.
Uh-huh.
But if you retire early, before you're full retirement age, you're basically locking yourself into lower benefits for life.
Okay.
You can't go back and change that.
Okay.
So if you retire at 62 as opposed to your retirement age maybe 66,
uh-huh,
you're getting 30% less in benefits. you wait it for retirement. So every year that you, you know, if you can wait one more year, then
yeah,
you'll see it above. And the thing is that these, you know, when you lock in, this is for life. Okay, mm-hmm. You can't go back and change that.
Right, right. As we're talking, some of our audience will put comments in the chat, and here's one audience member who says, "Our retirement is being stolen as we speak." What do you think they mean by that? Our retirement is being stolen as we speak. Is that maybe a prevalent opinion or what?
I'm not sure. You know, if I'm not sure what that means. Basically, we have to contribute. The thing that's working against us is Black Americans, one, a large percentage may work for jobs that don't offer 401ks.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
We have to save on our own.
Yeah, yeah.
That may be, but.
And you said something earlier. Let me take you back to your comment about pensions. What did you say about pensions earlier?
No, my father had a pension.
Uh-huh.
So we had generation baby boomers when we had pensions, but for the large part, pensions don't exist anymore.
Uh-huh.
So when you had a pension, you could retire and you were going to get a set amount of money every month for the rest of your life.
Okay.
So companies moved because they were expensive. Companies moved from pensions to 401ks.
Uh-huh.
But basically, everything is dependent on you. You have to decide. You have to put money into that 401k. You have to decide how to invest it. And in that sense, we're not comfortable. When I say we, African Americans aren't comfortable investing in stocks.
Right.
So we have to learn how to invest to improve how our portfolio grows over the years.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, let's stay with pensions for a minute. I'm wondering if the average African American, first of all, I'm wondering if the average African American realizes that pensions have sort of left the scene and that they have pretty much been replaced by 401ks. And the second part of that question is, African Americans, do we yet understand the process of a 401k? Okay, you've got pensions versus 401k. Is that something that we as African Americans are just not understanding? Where are we in all of that?
So that's where I think the financial literacy comes in. Many 401ks are basically offered by your employer.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and they're generally not available to people who work part-time.
Okay.
And they're also generally not available to people who work for small companies in many cases. So 50% of Americans aren't covered by 401ks.
Okay.
But if you are, you'll most likely have a company match. A company may match up to 3% of your contribution.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's the part where I say we have to, and I talk to and pull young people aside all the time, say, are you contributing to your 401k?
Yeah.
Because basically, if you're not contributing up to what the company matches,
uh-huh.
If they're matching a dollar for dollar up to the first 3%,
right.
then you're basically losing money. And that's what we call free money. So if you're not contributing up to the match, then you're not getting that money that the company is giving you for free.
Wow.
So,
okay, wait, let's say that again. If you're not contributing up to the max amount that the company is going to match.
Okay.
Then you're cutting yourself short.
You're cutting yourself short.
Wow. Wow, that's a key point. Here's another question from an audience member. Will Social Security be available for baby boomers?
I don't think Congress has the guts or the nerves to cut Social Security. That you know, there are so many. So I think Social Security is going to be around.
Okay. But now we hear all that talk that it's going off the screen. It's going away.
Okay, here's what might change.
Okay.
Because when, sure, we are looking at a deficit in 20 years.
Okay.
So the way Congress has in the past made up for deficits is by increasing the retirement age. Remember retirement age for Social Security used to be 65?
Yeah.
Mine was 66. And so depending on where you were born, you know, what month your retirement age is basically increasing. So what they have been discussions, and also we're living longer. So there
have
been discussions
right.
about, I don't know that they'll do this, but discussions about raising the retirement age to 70.
Oh, see, I didn't realize that. I missed that conversation.
Okay, and the other thing that they're doing is the amount of your salary the amount of your salary that's subject to Social Security taxes.
Okay.
Keeps going up.
Okay.
That's how they will. Those are some of the things they use to avoid cutting Social Security benefits.
Okay, but then let's just spend a little 30 seconds. I thought I heard you say, and I hope it's true, that you don't think Congress really has, I don't think you said the nerve, but you kind of think that Congress won't really just totally eliminate Social Security.
No, I don't think so. And most of the financial advisors and financial planners that I talk to don't think so.
Okay.
Okay.
Would that be a political noose around their neck? Would their constituents come after them?
You know how many seniors there are.
Oh, yes.
Of AARP. So yes, they could talk about, but I don't think it's a viable option in my lifetime.
I'm going to take a deep breath because that's so reassuring. That's reassuring to hear that. Now, let me ask you this. What does a successful retirement look like? What does it look like?
Okay, there are multiple things. Okay. So the first thing is we spend all this money, all this time saving for retirement.
Yeah.
People do, but we don't really know how to spend the retirement. I mean, the goal is to not run out of money, right?
Right.
So they used to have this rule, 4% of your savings a year. So your savings will last through your retirement.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, people are living to 90 these days. So one of the things they say is multiple streams of income. I mean, that's a catchphrase, but basically that means if you have a IRA or 401k, that's one stream. If you have Social Security, that's another stream. And if you have something, like a pension, possibly an annuity or something, but that you have money, you may have rental property.
Okay.
So it's best to have more than one stream of income, but the thing we don't plan is what are we going to do when we retire? You can't wake up and say, I've been working for 30 years, wake up at, 6 o'clock in the morning on the first day home and say, what am I doing today?
What do I do now? Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So so many people now are doing their second acts, working part-time, volunteering. But you need to have something to do. Some people say that's why the divorce rate is so high among baby boomers is because these, people retire and they have been, all of a sudden they have 7 days a week
You again? I got to be here all day with you again?
It's important that you figure out what you're going to do.
Correct.
It's important that you have adequate income, and it's important that you plan it out. We can't assume that we're going to die. Like the 70s, in our 70s, like our parents or grandparents
right.
did. Now, so many people living until 90. We have improvements in medicine. I have a chapter in the book that says basically don't let your children ruin your retirement.
Tell us about that chapter.
We're paying our children, and tuition is a separate thing.
Okay.
You know, we'll do everything for our children. But, if you basically giving money, loaning money, and taking it out of your retirement savings, they are going to end up taking care of you.
That's a heavy thought.
When, there are children that keep coming back and they don't have a sense of, I have to have this because at some point I'm going to quit work and this is all the money I'm having and I'm going to have to draw on this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So we're paying phone bills, cell phones, we're paying rent, car notes, and, the story financial advisor told me about who was taking care. Her grandson kept coming asking for money, and the financial advisor kept saying, "You can't sustain this. Okay, your what you have saved is you're going to run out of money."
Yeah.
I can't tell you how the story ends because she basically ran out of money in her account. And, so her financial advisor, so the account was there no longer. So he can't tell you how it ended.
Right.
But, we have to think about that. And,
While
I'm talking about financial advisors, get a financial advisor. They can help you map out a retirement plan.
Okay.
They can help you say, okay, you have this much money saved.
Mm-hmm.
So this is enough or this is not enough.
Right.
One of the things they talk about all the time is people come to them and say, okay, I'm putting my retirement papers and I'm ready to retire. And they look at the numbers and say, you can't retire. You don't have enough money
not
saved.
Not enough.
Okay? And that's the case. You need to either think about part-time work or continuing work. But they can help you with that, and they can help you set a savings goal so that you will be ready for retirement.
Okay, let me remind the audience. Today, we're really getting a wealth of information from Rodney A. Brooks. He is a veteran newspaper journalist for various publications, and he writes about finances, personal finances, and he spends a lot of he puts out a lot of wealth of information about retirement financing, and he talks about let me talk about his book. He has written a new book. He's written several before. His new book is Fixing the Racial Wealth Gap, Racism and Discrimination. And he has told us that one reason he wrote this book was because people were saying, you need to write a book specifically about finances for the African-American community. And so his specialty is retirement planning and personal finances. And some of the publications where he has worked, USA Today, The Washington Post, where he has written financial information, ESPN, The Undefeated, and National Geographic, among many others. So Rodney A. Brooks. Now, I wanted to just go back before I go to my next question. This was intriguing to me. You talked about waking up that morning after retirement and saying more or less, what do I do now? But then you mentioned that before that day comes, you said, if I heard you right, you really need to think about having multiple streams of income. And so would you kind of review some of those again? You kind of rattled off two or three. So you wake up and you're retired, but prior to that, you planned. And so you can kind of relax because you've got these multiple streams of income coming in. So spend a little time again reviewing us on some of those options.
Okay, so we can assume that you're going to get Social Security.
Okay.
And the longer you wait for Social Security, the higher amount your check is.
Okay. Okay.
And up until 70.
Okay.
So that case, now that's one. Now, if you have another stream of income, say you have a 401k.
Okay.
And you're retired at 60, okay, and your retirement age is 66. Then you may be able to live on the income from that 401k for 4 years until you reach full retirement age, and then you can get your full benefit.
Okay.
So,
okay.
That might be one advantage there.
Okay.
And some people still have a pension.
Okay.
One option also, if you think you're short, or if you think you need something to do, is a part-time job.
Okay.
And that could be coming in.
Okay.
As controversial as they are, annuities may be an option for some.
Wait, now tell me, why are annuities controversial?
Because, simply, let's say, unscrupulous salesmen have basically sold them to their complicated thing, and you need to understand what they are and the restrictions. So, and they can work for some people, and for some people, the older you get, the less you get.
Okay.
Well, no, basically, the old time annuity, you could put $100,000 in the annuity.
Okay.
And the next day go get hit by a bus and die, and basically it's gone. But now you can actually have your wife do basically, if something happens to you, your wife will get the money.
So
there were all these things that were complicated that people did, and the other things that restrict. So you don't want all of your money in an annuity, because I actually had a case where an elderly man called me up and said, basically, my financial advisor, who was not a certified financial planner, he was an insurance salesman, they talked the couple into putting all of their savings into annuities.
Okay.
And basically, you're basically locked into these contracts.
Wow.
You have no flexibility.
Oh.
And most of them don't pay off for 5 years. So that's one of the reasons why I say financial advisor, talk to them about whether it makes sense for you to be part of your plan.
Okay.
Because annuities are generally sold by insurance. They're backed by insurance companies.
Okay.
And people get big commissions for selling annuities. Okay, so that's one of the things they're going to be pushing them to you. And when I talk a little bit more about financial advisors, one of the first questions you want to ask is, are you a fiduciary? And what that means is that they have to put your interests before their companies. So they can't be selling you all these company products that may not be in your best interest. Okay.
Let me hear this. So when you go out to get a financial advisor, which you're really recommending that we do, one of the questions you need to ask is, are you a fiduciary?
Right.
Okay. And again, them being a fiduciary means what?
That they have to put your interest ahead of their company.
Okay.
And the best financial advisor to get is a certified financial advisor called a CFP.
Okay.
But they have to pass a test. Okay. They have to go to school. They have to study. And CPA. Okay, so they have to pass this long test to get this designation, and they are a certified financial planner would be a fiduciary.
Okay, great. Now I want to we're going to try to stay with the book as much as possible. And again, the name of the book is Fixing the Racial Wealth Gap, Racism and Discrimination. And the focus is how we as African, the book really focuses on what we African Americans need to know about financial situations and looking forward to retirement and what have you. And you deal with how did we get here? How did we as African Americans get in the financial hole that we're in? And so in your book, you go back and you do the historical exploration and you explain a lot of the historical things that got us into this financial hole. And at the beginning of your talk, say those that gap again about the home ownership gap and the that other gap. Those, say that again.
Yes. The average net worth of a white family is $171,000. The average net worth of a black family is $17,000. That's 10 times less than a white family. And home ownership, basically, we were devastated by the housing crash of 2007-2008. So the home ownership rate among black Americans is 43%,
uh-huh.
That compares to 73% for white Americans. But it's just too, you know, we invest less in stocks,
mm-hmm.
We contribute less in 401k, so
okay.
We have lower 401k balances,
okay.
Considering the less 401k balances. So, you know, there's so many, you know, statistics That's sort of scary. It is very scary.
Okay, now, in recent years, you testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging. What was some of the information you brought before that that committee about the situation of aging?
Earlier this summer that I talked to the committee.
Okay.
That was this year.
Okay.
So one of the things, basically, how black Americans are less prepared for retirement, especially black women, because black women in particular face many disadvantages. Now, and that's for a lot of reasons. I talked about black Americans take Social Security earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Black women take it earlier and depend on it for most of their income. But black women end up being caregivers, so they end up leaving their jobs.
Oh.
They're caregivers for their parents, their spouses, you know, their siblings. Most of that is black women.
Okay.
So they end up leaving their jobs for that.
Yeah.
Many of them work part-time, so they don't contribute as much into Social Security, so their Social Security payments are much less. And they actually have many health issues. And we talked about
that.
So they end up leaving jobs for health reasons.
Yeah.
Right? So all of that contributes to black women being, you know, severely disadvantaged when it comes time to retire.
Okay, let me ask you this. In your testimony before the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging earlier this year, did you get the sense that legislation might come out of that committee hearing that really would benefit? And let's just take the black woman, as you said, that ends up being a caregiver. She's got her own health issues, and she's left her job to care for somebody else. Did you get the sense that maybe some kind of legislation might come out of that hearing that really would benefit those various situations?
You know, legislation may come out of that committee, but it's not likely to come out of the Senate. There has been legislation that would improve in many of those areas that would improve some of those situations.
Okay.
But they're not likely to come out of the main Senate committees or come to the floor for a vote.
Okay, now let me move on to you and young people. You do a lot of talking with, even though you spend a lot of your professional time helping the aged, but you also mentor and talk to young people. What are some of the key messages you give, even like if, let's say, for instance, you spoke at a high school or something, what are some of the key messages you give to that age group?
Big things are spend, not save. Save, not spend.
Save, not spend.
I'm a big proponent of the 401k. So as soon as you're eligible, join up for the 401k. Financial literacy, I think, is increasingly being taught, but still not in a major way. At most schools, financial education needs to be a part of the basic curriculum of high schools. I don't think it's ever too young for kids to learn about money. And I talk to parents that you need to talk to. You need to talk to your children more about money because my parents didn't do that. They didn't know about it, but white parents talk to their children about money, about investing, and we need to do that more. My third, there's a lot about cryptocurrency these days. We have young investors who are more sophisticated than we were. So I put it on them to teach their parents about investing.
Okay.
So the whole thing is learn everything you can.
Uh-huh.
And the big thing I would say is, and you can do it through your 401k, but Black Americans there are reasons we're not in the stock market, okay?
What are some reasons?
Well, one is that if you don't make a lot of money, you're not willing to...
Hard-witted.
Right. They look at it as speculative.
Okay.
Basically, you're not willing to risk it in the stock market where you might possibly lose money.
Okay.
But the thing you have to realize is, the stock market is not something that you should be looking at how your stock did every day. It's a long-term investment.
Okay.
So you need to, invest in stocks for your long-term investment. And, maybe you can go back. That's how you save for buying your first house. That kind of thing. And so I would say some people, invest in stocks. Don't necessarily think you have to invest in real estate.
This is what we generally do. Okay, let me ask this. Back to the book, and again, the name of the book is Fixing the Racial Wealth Gap, Racism and Discrimination, meaning how did we get to the point of poverty that a lot of us are in? I just lost my question on that. I know what I was going to ask you. In your book, is there a particular chapter that you really want to point readers to that has some very essential information? Is there a particular chapter or chapters in the book where you really want to point readers to?
Um, One would be estate planning. Don't die without a will.
Okay.
Because one of the purposes of the book, and that's the book.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hold it up just a little longer. Fixing the racial wealth gap. Very good, very good. All right.
Okay. And you see the star James Brown. When James Brown died, they just settled his estate this year. What was it, like 15 years? And Prince died without a will. Who knows where that'll be resolved? Aretha Franklin, you could go on and on. But the average black person doesn't think about a will. And that's the only way you're going to make sure people you want to get your assets are going to get it. But that's also the only way you're going to pass assets to your children and your grandchildren,
right?
And leave something meaningful that's going to help narrow this wealth gap. Because what the average inheritance in a black family is a fraction of the average inheritance in a white family. So do an estate plan. Make sure that you're thinking ahead to your children and your grandchildren.
Okay.
And the other, you know, that's kind of related to this is a beneficiary, which I talk about all the time. Because what we don't do, and this is part of reviewing your estate plan,
okay,
is look at your beneficiaries on your life insurance, or your 401k, or your pension, whatever, because if you don't update, it doesn't matter what you say in your will, what you say in your beneficiary designation is what's going to happen.
Key point.
So if you don't want an ex-husband or an ex-wife to be your beneficiary, or your mother, because I hear one case where a man died young, and he never changed his beneficiary. It's a substantial estate. He never changed it from his mother to his wife. Well, the mother did not like the wife. The mother didn't need the money, but she didn't like the wife. So she basically would not share. So,
wow.
And then there's another case where it got never... the financial planner talked to him weeks before he died unexpectedly. He said it was all taken care of, but he left his ex-wife as a beneficiary.
Wow. So many situations.
So you have to look at that paperwork every year.
Okay.
That's why I said you need a financial plan. The planner can help you with that. But you need to update that financial plan every year because things change. You get married, you have children.
Right.
Things change.
Key point. Okay, here are two questions in the chat. Okay, one, is it too late for a baby boomer who has no money saved for retirement? How do they get started?
I like to say it's never too late.
Yeah.
But basically what you have to do is reduce your expectations.
Okay.
You may not be able to live the lifestyle that you're living right now.
Okay.
But the things you can start now. Start max it. If you have a 401k, max it out.
Uh-huh.
If you don't, then find some other savings vehicle.
Okay.
And if you can't afford a financial planner, there are agencies that might help you with that. Because there's Association of African Americans Financial Advisors called Quad A, and they do pro bono work. So sitting down with someone, even if you can't pay them, and figure it out, you may have to work longer. If you are forced to retire, you may have to work part-time.
Okay.
But those are the options. It's not, they're not all great options, but working longer is going to be the best bet if
very
you haven't.
Good, very good. Now,
so
we've got
to start serving now.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, but I do want to not forget to mention that you were recently honored and inducted into the Hall of Fame by the National Association of Black Journalists. And so congratulations for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
What did that mean to you to receive that distinction? And let me say, you have held various leadership positions with the National Association of Black Journalists. Well, how did you react to that being inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, it's always great to be honored by your peers, but for the work that I've done in trying, and part of it was helping young black journalists
uh-huh.
get their finances in order.
Okay.
You know, when they come to work, whether it was USA Today, wherever, first thing I asked, are you signed up for the 401k?
Okay.
There are people that I literally walked to the HR office to sign them up. So that's part of it. But part of it was what I've written. Because I didn't write, most of my time, my career as a journalist was an editor. And I started writing again when I retired from USA Today.
Okay.
So since then, I've been doing, basically wealth gaps or personal finance and retirement. So it meant a lot to come from an organization such as the
NAB. Good. Well, congratulations. Here's a comment in the chat. It says, congratulations, Rodney. Okay. Now, I did also, I want to hear a little bit about the young Rodney A. Brooks, growing up, where did you grow up and born and all of that? What were your aspirations as a youth? Did you think you would end up doing something like the career that you did pursue? What was young Rodney? What were his goals and what was he like?
Well, I grew up in northern New Jersey, north in Linden, New Jersey, and I decided in the seventh grade that I wanted to be a journalist.
Okay,
I got a book out the library. It said, they had these figures of books. So you want to be a doctor? So you want to be a lawyer? And I wanted to be a doctor, and I read the book, and I saw how long it took. I said, I don't think.
Scratch that.
So I kept getting, and then journalist, I was fascinated. So then I started school papers, and I went to Cornell, majored in communications, and my first job was in Ithaca, New York.
Okay, okay.
So I have wanted to be a journalist. I did not know many, there were, the trailblazers that I watched on New York TV stations, like Melba Tolliver and many of the anchors, but I did not know any until I graduated college and started going to school and started working at the Ithaca Journal. Then I learned about NABJ
okay.
and other organizations.
Very good, very good. Now I want to. And are you from a small or large family or what?
I was the second. Youngest in the family of seven, five children.
Is that right? Yes. All right, very good. Yes. Now, go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say my wife was from Dallas.
Tell us who your wife is and what her profession is.
My wife is actually, when she was in Dallas, her name was Sheila Dietrich, but so many people may know her then, but of course it's Sheila Brooks. Now, and she owns a advertising agency in Washington.
Very good, very good. Now, in our little time that we've got left, you recently, you still work, but you also officially went through retirement. I'm curious, when you've written about retirement for a long time, when you actually went through it, did you learn any personal lessons? Did everything turn out the way you expected it? What were there any lessons in your own retirement?
You know, the biggest lesson of my own was I retired and I took the buyout from USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
As that day approached,
yeah,
you know, and I was set. I mean, I knew how much money I had saved,
right?
And I was not planning to. I was planning to become a freelance writer and do other things. And I knew I, you know, so I knew I had I was fine financially. My wife was not retiring, but as they got closer, I just started worrying.
Okay.
You know, it's like, wait a minute, you know, how is it going to work out?
Right.
And I write about it, but I wasn't thinking about how stressful it was going to be.
Right.
So I actually did it.
Yeah.
You know, so you think about, am I going to, and how much money am I going to make? Because I'm basically going to be freelancing for the rest of my life. You know, how is it going to be from reducing from, you know, what I made to what I'm making? And so, you know, and then working from home, you know, I had a home office. I've had a home office for years.
Okay.
But it's another thing to actually have to work from the home office.
That was your man cave. And then you actually had to work there.
Yes. But the chair, I sat there for a couple of days. I was like, my back was killing me. I was like, wrong chair. Okay. The desk had this great antique desk. It was too small. So, all of these things.
That's funny. Oh my gosh, that's great. Okay, now we want to. How can people get the book?
Okay, you can get it at my website.
Okay,
my website. There's a link to the
I think we're going to put the website in the chat.
Okay.
So tell us what it is, and I think we'll put it in the chat.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The website is www.rodneyabrooks.com.
Okay, that should be pretty simple to
right?
remember your okay. name.
And it is also available on Amazon, but Amazon is sold out at the moment.
So. Oh, that's good news. Good
okay,
news.
But basically, you can order it. They will have more in the next day or so.
Wonderful.
So you can still order it, you know, if it's easier to order it on Amazon, that it's available there.
Okay, so let me repeat that website, www.rodneyabrooks.com, www.rodneyabrooks.com, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and is there an email address or anything in case anybody wants to send you a message?
Yes. Yes. My email is easy, just like the website.
Okay.
The email is rodney@rodneyabrooks.com.
Okay, rodney@rodneyabrooks.com.
That's right.
Very good. Now, to wrap up, any comments that, any points we missed, any comments, closing comments you want to make to the audience?
Well, the whole, when I talked about readers to writing to the book,
right.
but I want people to think about basically the next generation. We have to leave something for the next generation. And, you know, I talk to a lot of financial planners and black financial planners, certified financial planners.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And one of the ones I talked to, I said, basically, black people need to stop just having enough insurance to bury themselves.
Whoa.
And need something for their children. Stop getting those $5,000 insurance policies. You get $100,000 insurance so that your children and your grandchildren can have when you pass up.
Very
so
good.
That's one piece of advice I would say.
Very. Is that are those pieces in the book?
Yes. Yes.
Very, very much.
Yes.
So we have really, really, really been enlightened by you. And again, our audience, we've been talking with Rodney, R-O-D-N-E-Y-A, middle initial A, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S. He's a veteran journalist and author who writes about financial issues, retirement and personal finances. And He deals with all of it, investment, 401k, Social Security, retirement, all of the above. And he has had a history with many prominent publications, USA Today, Washington Post, the big wig publications. And so we're really grateful that you spent this time with us. Thanks for writing the book. And audience, go and get a copy. It's available, as he said, at his website, at Amazon. Amazon is replenishing because they sold out. So that's all good. Thank you. We wish you well and great success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All righty. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to say goodbye. That was Rodney A. Brooks. And we have for our second hour, we have entertainment segment. We're going to talk with some local entertainment providers in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so we're going to bring them on in a minute. And so I'm just reminding you that you're watching I Was Just Thinking. I am your host, Norma Adams-Wade. And we've got just a really interesting lineup today. So let me introduce our next guest, and that is he's with the Jubilee Theater in Fort Worth. He's with the Jubilee Theater in Fort Worth, and he's the creative director, and he's going to talk with us about some seasonal holiday entertainment that they have. And so let me bring him in and have him introduce himself. Okay. Okay, this is Dr. Richardson, and he's with the Jubilee Theater in Fort Worth. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wade. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. I'm very good. All right, so you are going to tell us what we can do in the Fort Worth area at Jubilee Theater for the holiday. You've got two particular events I think you're going to tell us about. And so we look forward to hearing about them. And so let's begin. What is this that's happening on December 11th and 12th? What is the name of the performance? And just in your own words, tell us what's happening on December 11th and 12th.
Gotcha. Yes, ma'am. Actually, it's going to be the 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Oh, okay. So we're adding the 10th. 10th,
yes,
11th,
ma'am.
And 12th. Okay.
Yes. We have two separate events happening in our space. It's a great opportunity for the family to come out and enjoy. On the 10th, 11th, and 12th, we will be doing a Funk Doctor Christmas. It is a Christmas concert for the entire family and community to come out, laugh, and enjoy.
Okay.
Now, while we're doing that, right next door on the 11th and 12th, we'll be doing photos with Santa, Black Santa. Representation matters, and we wanted to make sure that we have that opportunity for the community. There's a free opportunity for the community. You can come out and get one free photo with Santa, and additional photos can be purchased.
Very good, very good. That's P-H, that's P-H-U-N-K, Funk Doctors Christmas. Is that correct?
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
Now how did that come about? And tell us about Funk Doctors. Is that music? Or give us a little more
ma'am.
Detail.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Well, Fort Worth is funky town. And what better way to celebrate the musical style and feeling of Fort Worth than by bringing in a local band that is all of Fort Worth and more? So the Funk Doctors is a local group here,
okay,
comprised of 21 or more artists,
okay,
that have recognition all over the world. but they're going to be coming in this weekend and just giving us their best. They're a cover band that does a little bit of everything. And what we would usually be on this time of year is a full-on holiday show run for the entire community in a 424 performance run.
Okay.
But instead, we said, you know, let's do something fun, let's do something safe, and let's minimize exposure. But at the same time, we have a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah.
And we have a lot to celebrate. And what better way to do that than with funk music?
Okay,
With a little bit of soul, a little bit of R&B, a little bit of country, and a little bit of everything.
Okay, say that again today. Say that again. It's sort of an overview of music. Funk.
Yes, ma'am. Funk, R&B,
R&B,
soul,
gospel,
all put in a pot together.
Okay.
Think of it like a really good gumbo.
Okay, well, okay, a gumbo presentation. I love it. I love it. Well, you know, it's we've been all shut in, and we made it through the previous year, and it's just refreshing to anticipate getting out, and particularly during the holiday, and like you're saying, this. I mean, music, what did they say? Music is one of the greatest medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a wonderful offering at this time to the public. What kind of reaction are you hearing about people anticipating it?
Well, we already have at least two shows that are sold out.
Whoa.
Yes, ma'am. I was surprised. We were a little bit worried in that. Are we ready? We're ready, but is the community ready?
Right.
And what we found is we've been dealing with, you know, this adventure of COVID for going on almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
And we're at a place where we have to roll up our sleeves and say we're going to push through this, but at the same time, we're going to remember that we're human, and we're going to remember that we need that human connection with one another.
Right.
So how do we do so in a way that still lets us celebrate but be safe? And so this concert is the perfect way to come out for an hour and a half, forget about everything else, clap your hands, stomp your feet, and enjoy great music by phenomenal artists, all local artists to the DFW area, including the singers. Everyone is fully vaccinated.
Okay.
And just forget about everything for a little while.
Wonderful. Wonderful. What a wonderful prescription. Now, I've got a little bit of information here. I think I'm overlooking the time. Let me say the dates again. Okay, a funk Doctor's Christmas, and it's December 10 through 12 at the Jubilee Theater in Fort Worth, and that's 506 Main Street. But now, what are the hours? I can't seem to.
Perfect. So Friday is going to be a 8 o'clock show.
Okay, Friday and 8 o'clock show. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. Saturday the 11th. There's a 3 p.m. show and an 8 p.m. show.
Okay.
And then on Sunday the 12th, we're shutting it all down with the 3 o'clock show.
Okay, very good.
That's
and before I forget, and we've got some more things we want to talk about on that, but let's go ahead and tell the audience how they can get tickets. And now I know you've got a box office. And you've got some. You can email and you can telephone. Tell us how the public can get tickets to this performance.
Yes, ma'am. So, number one, you can go to JubileeTheater.org.
Okay. Okay.
Theater with the R E.
Okay.
So,
Jubilee. J U B I L E E. And then theater is theatre .com.
.org.
JubileeTheater.org. Okay. And then once you get there, what all kind of information will that site tell you?
So what you will do is you will click on the icon that says A Funk Doctor Christmas, and you can select the show that you would like to buy a ticket for and go from there.
Okay, great.
But for those of us who may not be the most tech savvy or just want to knock it out real easy, I'm in the same boat. Sometimes I'm just not in the mood.
You know it.
between the hours of 12 p.m. and 5 p.m. You can call our box office. We have a phenomenal box office coordinator who is waiting with bated breath to speak with you.
Wonderful.
And our box office number is 817-238-4411.
Let me say it again. 81, this is the box office. Like you said, if you're not that tech savvy, you can call the box office, 817. And I think we're going to put it in the chat, but let me just say it, 817-338-4411. It'll be in the chat. But, yeah, you can call the box office. And then I saw somewhere where you don't really need a paper ticket.
We will have, once you purchase your ticket, if you come in and say, my name is, we will know who you are and be ready to receive. I think that's one of when I got here, one of the most special things I learned about Jubilee Theater is that customer service oriented relationship. In that when you come in over to Jubilee Theater, you're coming home. And just like home, we know who you are.
Okay. You
tell us your name and come on in.
Grandma knows. Okay.
Just in case you lose your ticket.
In case you lose it. Very good. Okay. That's the performance. Now tell us about Black Santa. What all will go on with Black Santa, and how are the little ones going to be entertained by Black Santa?
So at a time where we just want to, this is that holiday season where everybody's trying to get their holiday picture taken care of.
Uh-huh.
And doing it out of the way.
Right.
So we have a free opportunity for the community. You can either go to our website, or we will be in a position to take walk-ups where you can sign in and go from there. That is going to be right next door to us. You can still come right to Jubilee Theater, and we can get you taken care of, or we'll just walk you right next door at 508
okay.
Main
okay.
Street.
Okay.
And what will happen is you will sign in.
Okay.
Or if you've already signed up, we'll get you checked in and registered. And then we'll, of course, have our elves there introduce you to Santa, and then you'll take a photo with Santa. You can do either, the goal is each family will only get one photo with Santa
that is
free of charge.
Okay.
If you like additional pictures,
uh-huh.
that is available at the cost of $15.
Okay, very good, very good, very good. Now, let me also you can... go to the website again for mm-hmm. more information, and you
yes,
can
ma'am.
Also call that box office again. And mm-hmm. and so the two addresses that we're talking about in Fort Worth are 506 Main Street. That's the theater.
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me. And then 508
Main Street,
where you can take your photo with Black Santa.
Exactly.
Very good.
And what I would also love to make sure that we mention is we are following all COVID protocols. So in between each individual photo with Santa,
uh-huh.
we're going to be doing a full sanitation
of
Santa, his lap, and everything else.
Okay.
So that way we protect Santa, because uh-huh. Santa has a lot of work to do
right.
very soon.
Right.
So we want to
get those reindeers together. You can't be getting sick and those reindeers have to go by themselves. Okay.
Exactly. And we want to keep the kids safe as well.
Correct.
So
that's great information. So it's going to follow the health protocol. And what about mask wearing?
Exactly. So everyone will come in masked, and then when it's time to take their photo with Santa, they can take that mask off, take their photo with Santa, and then put their mask back on as they leave.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, everybody, we are, and I'm going to ask you to pronounce your first name for us again.
Not a problem. I am D. Wambui Richardson.
D. Wambui, and that's spelled W-A-M-B-U-I, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's on the screen. It's on the screen. D. Wambui Richardson. And am I saying that you're a creative director? Is that the right title? What's the title?
Artistic director.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, we want to hear a little bit about your personal story. Okay, mm-hmm. How long have you been at Jubilee Theater? where you originate from, where, and how did you choose theater? Tell us, tell us about D. Wahui Richardson. Tell us, We're
so
curious.
I have been an, yes, ma'am. I have been an artist almost all my life. This is going on my fourth season here with Jubilee Theater as the artistic director, working in partnership with the best managing director this side of the Mason-Dixon line, Ms. Christy Howard. And together we kick the doors open and tell great stories that move forth the mission of Jubilee Theater. Prior to my coming here, I was the executive director for the National Academy Foundation School in Baltimore.
Okay.
I oversaw multiple programs in CT and STEM. And at the same time, I was an artist in residence with Baltimore Center Stage and with Coppin State University. So for the last 10 to 13 years, I've always been on both sides of the table, both in the educational side and the artistic. And now that my boys have graduated high school and they started college, it was time for me to really pursue what my passion and my dream was. And I feel that prior to coming here, every experience that I've ever had has primed and honed me to become the artistic leader that I am now. So it's been a blessing. But Jubilee Theater presented me with a great opportunity to put all of my eggs, all of my talent in one bucket together.
Oh, that's a very inspirational background. Now, I'd like to hear about some of your productions that you feel, well, I know you're proud of all of them, but do you have like some favorites that you've put on at Jubilee Theater, or some performers that you felt you could just sense that Broadway next, they're bound for Broadway. Tell us about some of those successes.
What you start naming names, you can always meet somebody else. What I would say is, the blessing and joy of working here is that every day I see the tremendous blessing of talent that the DFW area has.
Right.
And what Jubilee allows us to do every day is to hone and craft those skills on a daily basis with artists.
Very good.
Last season, of our 40th season, we were able to almost unofficially have an acting company, and it wasn't intentional. The goal was we wanted to make sure that everybody was COVID compliant, everybody was COVID safe. And if I worked with you 6 weeks ago, I knew where you were before then, and I knew where you were 6 weeks before that. So it made it easier for us to almost bubble a group of artists together for an entire season. This upcoming season, we're looking at busting the bubble and bringing all new faces and voices to the table. But last year, that was a necessity to keep us all safe.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely blessed and proud to say that we got through our entire 40th season with absolutely no COVID cases.
Oh, so wait a minute. Hold on. Say that again.
If I say it twice, I might shout now.
That's phenomenal.
Yes, ma'am.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful.
And what that meant for Jubilee Theater.
What is season? Go ahead.
What that meant for Jubilee Theater is it gave us the opportunity to honor the contracts of our artists, our designers, our builders. So many theaters, unfortunately, had to close their doors last year.
Due to
a multitude of concerns. We were able to pivot, as my managing director likes to use. That's my favorite word, pivot. we were able to pivot last year.
Right.
And put everything on the streaming platform. And by moving to a streaming platform, that let us honor those contracts. We know that a lot of artists depend on those independent gigs, and once they put them in their calendar, money that they're looking forward to and they're counting.
Okay.
And so as Jubilee Theater, we wanted to, make sure that we kept our promise and kept our word to the artists we attempted to employ.
Okay.
And in 41 seasons, we have yet to not shut down the show. We have for 41 years consistently put up an entire season of work without anything standing, regardless of what's going on in the background.
Right, right.
Our doors have stayed open, and our productions have moved forward.
Okay, here are some comments in the chat. Let's see here now. Okay, this one says, I have been a patron of Jubilee for decades. Question, what is the value of the relationship between Fort Worth's Bass Performance Hall and Jubilee?
And I think that's in reference to last season. Last season, we closed out our production of Southern Boys at Bass Hall.
Okay.
And that allowed us a great opportunity. One, it allowed us to open our doors in terms of social distancing. Right now, our performance space is a house of 146 seats. By moving the show to Bass Hall and locking in that partnership, we were able to, you know, by the end of that show, we were serving 220 people, but everybody was able to socially distance, spread out. I mean, Bass Hall has more than 2,000 seats.
Okay.
So we moved the entire lower level. That opened the door and made it possible for us to do that.
Okay.
Also, a partnership with Bass Hall allows Jubilee Theater to think about productions that are on a bigger scale,
that
from a budget standpoint doesn't support what we can do in our space.
Okay, now so your space, Jubilee, seats about how many roughly?
146.
146. And then Bass, weight was, you know, of course, weight. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Very good.
So
very
an
good.
Example would be our upcoming production of Dreamgirls. A production like Dreamgirls is a big show with a big cast.
Uh-huh.
So you almost want to think about moving it to a larger slate.
Okay, okay.
So that one, we have more space backstage.
Okay.
You have more accessibility to dressing rooms. It'll be easier to keep everybody COVID compliant. And from an audience perspective, you have more space to spread out.
Okay.
So that in this year, while we're trying to figure out the world of COVID, how do we keep everybody safe moving
forward? Right,
right. So it's not official yet. We're trying to lock in some things with Dreamgirls. But that partnership with Bass Hall gave us that unique opportunity to think a little bit outside of the box.
Okay, now here's
prior to me getting here,
go ahead.
One show we did was The Color Purple. I wasn't here at that time, and it was a phenomenal show. The audiences loved The Color Purple.
Right.
But if you went backstage, it would have been a different kind of experience because everybody was on top of each other. So how do we, you know, create these types of big Broadway musicals in a safe way that makes it enjoyable for the audience and the artist?
Let me just ask, any open doors for expansion or anything like that? Or is there a reason to keep it homey and you know, close-knit?
That is a loaded question. I think that as we look at our future,
okay,
Jubilee Theater is thinking of its legacy. Mr. Rudy Eastman had a very specific vision for Jubilee Theater. And the stories that we would tell and the audiences that we would reach.
Okay.
As we grow, that's the joy of growing pains.
Uh-huh.
That means we have to stretch our arms a little bit.
Right.
And inevitably, we're looking at now having that conversation of what does that growth look like?
Okay.
Does that mean expanding our space?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean growing our space?
Uh-huh.
Does that mean having a second space?
Okay.
We're trying to figure all of that out now.
Yeah.
The best people to help us do that is our community. The more we can pack our seats, the more we can justify the possibility of exploring.
Well, okay, now you lead me to and I, there are a couple of more comments I want to get to, but you mentioned about opening up to opinions. What kind of community support do you get? I mean, is the African-American community really supporting, and not just Jubilee, mm-hmm. but theater in general, local theater in general?
Mm-hmm.
As a community, how are we supporting you? And what does the public to do to support you? And let me just say, I think one of the comments here says, how can I donate to specific Jubilee programs? So what can the public do?
So there are three ways to support Jubilee Theater. Way number one is show up.
Okay.
Have a seat and enjoy.
Okay.
Not come by yourself. Bring a friend.
Okay.
Bring a child with you. I think the more we expose one another to Jubilee Theater, the more we're able to carry forward the methods of Jubilee Theater and what we do.
Okay.
The second way to support Jubilee Theater is to consider buying a subscription or a pass.
Okay.
We're doing flex passes. So, and what that flex pass allows you, the unique opportunity of doing, is locking in a certain number of tickets
okay.
to get your through the entire season. And then when we are able to open up nice and clean next season four, consider buying a season subscription.
Season subscription, key point. Really help. That would really help. Mm-hmm. Great.
What that season subscription does is allow us to plan in advance.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. Then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time.